don't move if you want to live.
A bandit.
I have distressing news for your excellency. I had a small drinking bout with the agent at the Bank of Madrid. While in his cups, the fellow was somewhat indiscreet. A drunken man is untrustworthy, excellency. I will act for him. Hand it over. And now, senora, that little trinket.
You'd rob a woman.
I can't afford gallantries.
I refuse. You dare not take it.
Quickly, senora. I should hate to mark such a lovely cheek. This time, excellency, I take only your money. Next time... Adios.
Hello and welcome to the Film and Water Podcast, proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. I'm your host, Rob Kelly, and it's Zorro Month here on the Fire and Water Podcast Network. So we're here to talk about 1940's The Mark of Zorro, starring Tyrone Power. And joining me are my pals, Max Romero.
Oh, vexatious.
and Chris Franklin.
I got nothing. That's great. Hey.
Yeah, let's just wrap this up here. So anyway, Zorro Month's been fun, everybody. Let's get on to what are we doing next? Okay. No, like I said, we're here to talk about The Mark of Zorro, starring Tyrone Power, Linda Darnell, and Basil Rathbone, among other Hollywood heavy hitters. This film came out on November 8th, 1940. It is, of course, not the first Zorro film. There was the silent film in the 20s, and there were the ones later on with Antonio Banderas and Catherine Zeta-Jones. But in many ways, this is sort of the most iconic version of the character. The plot, such as it is, and it's basically lifted from the novel. It's tired of Governor Quintero's exploitation of poor Californians. Don Diego, the foppish son of the former governor, decides to fight back and by assuming the identity of the masked hero, Zorro. Armed with a sword, Zorro fights on behalf of the people against the corrupt Quintero and his wicked assistant, Captain Pascual. At the same time, Diego falls for Lolita, the governor's niece, and he pursues her while constantly battling to oust Quintero from power. So let's start with you. When did you first see this movie?
You know, that is a good question because I don't remember. I know I was young, and I know it was probably a Sunday afternoon because that's when I usually saw these kinds of movies back in the day, back before cable, kids. And it's a movie I've seen in bits and pieces since then. And like I've mentioned elsewhere, Zorro has just kind of always been in, you know, at least in my pop culture sphere. This one made a big impact on me. The other one that, strangely enough, and it's been mentioned more than once, is The Gay Blade. But this one really made an impact on me just because of kind of just how iconic it is. You know, it's really everything you could want from a Zorro movie. I mean, you can really understand why this above other Zorro movies.
Chris, what about you?
Yeah, I think I saw this. I must have seen this when I was fairly young because I knew what it was when I read The Dark Knight Returns for the first time. I knew who Tyrone Power was. I knew he played Zorro. So I saw at least part of it at some point. And then after that, I know I watched it late 80s, early 90s. But I honestly hadn't really seen it since then till we started talking about doing this because I, you know, it would come on TCM and it would always be some time when I wasn't going to be at the house. And I DVR'd it at some point and I just never got around to watching it. And then, you know, we got rid of our satellite dish and my DVR went with it. And so I lost it. So I took this opportunity to watch it again. So yeah, it's always, I've always known that Tyrone Power played Zorro. It's just one of those strange things.
I kind of want to echo Chris too, because this is the first time I've seen it start to finish in a long time. And it was almost like watching a new movie.
Yeah, I had the same reaction. I saw this. I know I saw The Mark of Zorro back in my Movies Unlimited video store days in the early 90s when I was renting like 2-3 movies a night and just gorging myself on everything. But I have no memory of it, just none. And so when I watched it again, I actually watched it twice but like a week apart for this record, it really was like seeing a brand new movie. I just didn't remember hardly anything from it. And one of the first things that I started noticed when I, in the opening scene, there's this crawl where it sets the setting and it talks about that it's set in Madrid and it gives you just the basic setup. And by the way, this one was directed by Ruben Mamoulian. His most famous credit is probably Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde with Frederick March. Frederick March won an Oscar for that performance. He also directed Blood and Sand with Tyrone Power and Linda Darnell. And then he did a musical called The Silk Stockings, and which was, I think, his next to last film. He died in 1987. He had a relatively short career, but a couple of definite highlights here is, but the first thing I noticed is that this is clearly an A production. And what I mean by that is in old time Hollywood, they had very, very distinctive lines about A and B production. B productions were B movies, low budgets, always black and white, not a lot of extras. And they were the second half of double bills. But this film, with the opening where we're seeing Don Diego in his training, and you see there's hundreds of extras, all in period costumes, all with period detail. They're going through their paces where they're running around on their horses and they're practicing there with their swords and stuff. You can see that this is an A-level production. And it's funny because at the time, superheroes were just completely considered kiddie matinee stuff, literally. Superman was a movie serial. Captain America was a movie serial. Batman was movie serial. That stuff was done with no budgets, and it really just, those things were just considered kiddie fare. But this, Zorro had that patina of literature. And so this thing is given an A-level production. And it's a really, just from the opening scene, you can tell this, they, 20th Century Fox put a lot of money into this because it's a really handsome looking movie.
Oh yeah, yeah. It feels like, you know, it feels like a another version of that same kind of deal of The Adventures of Robin Hood. I mean, it just, and we'll get, there's some cast from that movie too.
Oh, man, there's a lot of DNA from that movie in this movie.
Yeah, but this is like 20th Century Fox's, you know, bite at that apple, I think. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a modern day, more, well, it's not a modern day, but it's relatively, you know, within the past 20 year creation. So it's a modern retelling of a Robin Hood type story. So, yeah, I think, yeah, it's definitely, that's what I got out of this too, is that, yeah, 'cause, you know, Republic was making Zorro serials before and after this, but yeah, this is totally A. Definitely.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we already mentioned Tyrone Power, Linda Darnell are in this movie. Basil Rathbone is in this movie. Eugene Pellett, Gail Sondergaard, J. Edward Bromberg, the wonderfully named Montague Love. I just love that that's Zorro's dad. I just, that's a great handle to go through life with. Over, like, let's just jump right into it. Like, my big issue with this film, such as it is, and I don't know if I'm supposed to have an issue with this because it is Zorro month after all, but I want to see if you guys agree with me. The one thing that this movie really needed, more Zorro. Am I wrong? Like, this movie doesn't have enough Zorro in it.
And, you know, I agree with you in a way. I think what it needed was more sword fighting. It's kind of like Superman Returns. You know, you wanted more Superman lifting jets. Mm. And in Mark of Zorro, you get a lot of Zorro riding around on his horse and kind of stalking the shadows, but you don't really get a lot of what you think of when you think of Zorro. You know, there is one excellent sword fighting scene. I mean, there's a couple, but they don't really come up to be much. And, you know, no whip, nothing like that. And so, yeah, I mean, there wasn't a whole lot of what you expect when you think of Zorro.
It really is kind of like Zorro Begins in a lot of ways. Like, mm-hmm. It really is. It's like, you know, you kind of feel like if they had done a second one with Tyrone Power, that would have been the movie where he was really ripped it up as Zorro. But so much of it is kind of like it's like a period costume drama with the occasional moments where he's got a mask on. And I have to wonder, do you guys think it was the fact that Zorro, unlike Tarzan, or Sherlock Holmes, who were kind of in that same realm where they're kind of superhero-ish, but not exactly, their genre characters. Because Zorro wears a mask, the only other person I could think of that's a contemporary of him is like the Lone Ranger, and Lone Ranger was considered kiddie fare. Do you think that they thought maybe that by the fact that he's wearing a mask, it's just too juvenile, so we're going to really got to keep him not wearing it? I mean, he literally wears a mask in what, two scenes in this whole movie?
I wonder if it wasn't just, you know, Tyrone Power. You know, it's kind of the same thing that they throw at superhero movies today. Oh, freaking Spider-Man took his mask off again. Mm-hmm. You know, It's that kind of thing, you know, you got Tyrone Power, so you don't want to keep his face covered up through the whole movie because he's a really handsome guy.
That's true.
You know, you're paying to see Tyrone Power, and I mean, he even switched the mask up. He's got a very inconsistent costume in this film, which surprised me. You got the bandana over the mouth, you've got the skull cap with the hat, and the skull cap with the hat and the cape. You only get one scene with the complete classic Zorro outfit, really, with the cape and the mask and the hat. And I noticed that too. And I mean, the ending is, and it's great, but it's like, he's technically not Zorro at the end of the
he's
movie.
Great. Yeah. He's just Don Diego in the end. I'm like, okay.
Yeah, I actually have a note about that. I was thinking, you know, that to people now who are so used to things like that being the first part of a franchise, it kind of surprised me because it was like, well, wait a minute, it's over forever. Yeah. It's not only Zorro Begins, it's Zorro Ends.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, because everybody knows he's Zorro, so it's like, unless he like leaves town and becomes Zorro somewhere else, you know, there's, I mean, you can argue that Antonio Banderas is unmasked at the end of his movie, but nobody really knew who he was, you know, so, you know, at that point. So, yeah, but everybody in town knew who Don Diego was, and he made sure they knew who he was, and boy, did he make a splash. But,
Well, and I will say that too, the balance between Don Diego and Zorro is pretty faithful to the book, because in the book, which is originally titled The Curse of Capistrano and then became The Mark of Zorro, about half the scenes are with Don Diego. So that is that's consistent with the source material, I guess.
Okay, I wanted to ask you about that because I know you guys talked about that over on the Mirror Factory. I have not read the book, and I didn't know whether how faithful it was. By the way, we should mention some of the behind the scenes people in this film. The screenwriters. This was adapted from the book by a writer named John Taintor Foote, who has a handful of credits. Nothing. I didn't see anything terribly remarkable in there. It's funny that he gets sort of permanent credit for this film when they remade Zorro in the 1970s as a TV movie. He still got credit because they used the same basic blueprint, even though he had literally nothing to do with it. But the screenplay was written by two people, a woman named Bess Meredith. Right there, that's unusual that a woman was writing sort of an action-adventure film. She worked on movies like The Redheaded Woman and Under Two Flags. And then the other person was a screenwriter named Garrett Fort. Now, Chris, as a Monster fan, I'm pretty sure that you're familiar with who Garrett Fort is.
Yes. The name Garrett Fort was like, okay, gotcha.
Dracula, Frankenstein, and Dracula's Daughter.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah. He's definitely, there's quite a bit of Universal DNA in this movie, Universal Monster DNA as well. He's got some movies under his belt. That's for sure.
that's some real cred to be able to have those two giant hits under your belt and then move on to this. I mean, so they really thought he must've been like a good genre guy. Kind of, it's a different genre, but adapting material and turning it into a screenplay. So I mean, overall, let's just sort of do a 30,000 foot thing, as Shag likes to say. Like, overall, what is your feeling about this movie? Like, how much did you like it, Max?
I enjoyed it quite a bit, actually. It's like I was saying, it's a very condensed version of the book, and things get changed here and there. So it's not if you read the book is different enough that you're going to see those differences. But the movie itself is, I had a lot of fun with it. And if it means anything, my wife Sandy was sitting on the couch next to me when I was watching it, and she was doing something else. She wasn't paying attention. And about, I don't know, halfway into it, she was actively watching it. Mm-hmm. And at the end, she was telling me that was a really fun movie. And, you know, it is just that kind of film. It's, it is very much an action movie. It's got a lot of humor in it. Very well cast, I thought. And, you know, there's a lot to speak well of it. I mean, I would watch it again.
Chris, what are your overall thoughts on it?
It's kind of funny because Cindy was sitting on the couch in the living room and got involved in it too, Max, and we both really enjoyed it. I having just come off of watching a lot of the Guy Williams Disney series, which is really that's my Zorro mac and cheese, as Shag would say. It took a little getting used to the differences of you know, Don Diego is very, very foppish in this film versus the way Guy Williams portrayed it. And Guy Williams even said, you know, he had to go in a different direction than Tyrone Power on a sustained TV series. Because you can't imagine, you know, putting up with Don Diego like this for 70-some episodes, right? But he was great. I mean, you know, he totally sold it. Overall, I mean, I was completely engaged. It went by very quickly. I mean, it went by at a good clip. Like most movies of the time, you know, the actors had their scenes and that established their characters right from the get go. And I mean, all of the characters, they all had great bits. I thought the kind of interesting relationship that the alcalde had and his wife had, that was pretty, the idea of this, the alcalde's wife making time with these other men, that was pretty racy for 1940. I'm surprised the Hays Code didn't slap them for that, honestly. I was kind of surprised, you know, how much, I mean, I knew it had a good cast, but J. Edward Bromberg that plays the alcalde Quintero, he actually shows up and he's got a very important part in Son of Dracula.
That's right. That's right.
Both Son of Dracula and Son of Frankenstein that features Basil Rathbone are going to be covered on House of Frankenstein this year. So it was kind of cool. That's like, oh, I knew Basil Rathbone was in this, but it's like, oh, now I've got, you know, a double dip into the into the Universal Monster movies I like. So, the cast was, I was really impressed again, just every character, the priest, Don Diego's father and mother, which it was interesting that his mother was around in this version. They were all fleshed out really well, and I really enjoyed it.
Let's talk about the cast there. I mean, I gave the names at the top of the show. I mean, of course, Tyrone Power, big movie star. He was in films like In Old Chicago, the aforementioned Blood and Sand. He's the star of The Razor's Edge, my beloved Razor's Edge, a great movie called Nightmare Alley. One of the things that I appreciated about this film and his role in it is that Tyrone Power himself, as you mentioned, Chris, very handsome guy. I mean, impossibly handsome looking guy. I mean, real leading man type looks. And apparently, you know, if you look at his credits in the 30s, it's a lot of fluffy musicals and westerns. And he wanted meatier parts. He wanted stuff that he thought he was more capable of doing. And Hollywood just didn't see him like that. They were sort of like, look, audiences, especially women, love you in these parts, love you in these musicals. Why would you want to get off that? And he yearned to do something a little more significant, which, not to overplay this, but it reminds it to me, there's some thematic resonance there with Don Diego, is that, of course, in the movie, Don is acting like this big fop. You know, he's like a dandy and he's got his handkerchiefs and he's just like, oh, I need a rest right now. But we know that secretly he's actually this tough man of action and he's capable of a lot more. And I have to wonder if Tyrone Power didn't see a little bit of himself in that kind of thing. It was something where he's like, hey, I know I'm capable of a lot more. And Tyrone Power actually went off to fight in World War II. And when he came back, if you look at his films after that, that's when they start getting interesting. I mentioned The Razor's Edge. He did that movie Nightmare Alley, which we covered on Film and Water a couple of years ago, which is a great movie, dark, dark, dark movie, where he plays a circus geek, if you can believe such a thing. It really is kind of something where he thought he was capable of doing a lot more, and I think he kind of shows that here, even though this movie is glossy and stuff like that. Linda Darnell was in movies like Brigham Young with Tyrone Power, Blood and Sand again. She was in My Darling Clementine. If you can believe it, she was 16 when she made this movie.
Yeah.
16. I mean, my goodness. She and Tyrone Power ended up doing four movies together. So obviously, Hollywood thought they were a good pair. They kept putting them together. Basil Rathbone, everybody knows who Basil Rathbone is. He was, of course, in The Adventures of Robin Hood, Son of Frankenstein. He played Sherlock Holmes. Eugene Pallette plays Fray Philippe. He, of course, also appeared in The Adventures of Robin Hood, playing Friar Tuck in that movie. Here, he's basically Friar Tuck. He's the same character.
Yeah.
He just has a different name. He was in other movies like My Man Godfrey, The Lady Eve. Gail Sondergaard plays Inez Quintero, the woman who's got quite the hots for Don Diego, even though she's married to the to Don Luis Quintero. She was in movies like Anthony Adverse, The Climax, one of my favorite Abbott and Costello movies, The Time of Their Lives. Mm-hmm. She did The Anna and The King of Siam with Linda Darnell. There's J. Edward Bromberg, who you mentioned. He was in Son of Dracula. Phantom of the Opera, the 1940s one. Return of Frank James. Jesse James with Tyrone Power. And then Montague Love, who I mentioned, who was in movies like Gunga Din. Also with The Adventures of Robin Hood and The Seahawk. Now, one other credit that I wanted to mention, we all talked about the Batman connection. Is that, of course, this movie was seen by young Bruce Wayne. And was it – did Frank Miller establish that? Is that in Dark Knight? Yeah. Is that the first time it's mentioned?
That's the first time it was established in Dark Knight Returns, yeah.
Okay. So apparently also in the cast for this movie, playing a character named Rodrigo, is Robert Lowry. And Robert Lowry played Batman in the 1949 Batman and Robin movie serial.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Are you guys able to spot him? I don't know what character, who Rodrigo was. I never noticed somebody was some character named Rodrigo, so I couldn't spot Robert Lowry.
I thought he was the guy that was telling him, like, oh, you know, you're the commandant wants to see you. You know, he's got a message for you. And, you know.
Oh, okay.
Oh, his friend. Yeah.
I think that's Robert Lowry. He shows up in one of the Universal Mummy movies later. And also, he's on an episode of The Adventures of Superman where people mistake that he is Superman and they pull kryptonite on him.
Fantastic.
He's not Superman, he's Batman.
That sounds like a 1950 Superman comic right there.
It does. It's a world's finest issue.
Yeah, that does sound like a world's finest issue. That's amazing. Two other actors I wanted to mention just before we kind of get off the cast. One of the playing an uncredited soldier in one of the scenes is Ralph Byrd. And Ralph Byrd was more famous as Dick Tracy. He played Dick Tracy in a bunch of the B-level movies at the time. And he also played the Vigilante. In the movie serial, the DC Comics character. So we've got Batman and the Vigilante in this movie. And then the one other actor I have to mention playing a soldier, and we see a big close-up of him. I was able to recognize him. He's uncredited here, is Fortunio Bonanova. And the reason I know him is he is the opera coach in Citizen Kane. He is the one who is trying to teach Charles Foster Kane's wife, Susan, how to be an opera singer. And he's the one, they cut back to him and he goes, no, because she's hopeless. She can't sing. And that's Fortunio Bonanova. And he did that. This was before he did that. So there's some interesting faces popping up here and there in this film. But I, Chris, I'm glad you mentioned the thing about Inez Quintero, because Gail Sondergaard, she clearly has the hots for Don Diego. And they didn't quite go super explicit, but I liked the idea that because we get the sense that Don Luis Quintero is the control of the government by force, but he's clearly an idiot, right? I mean, he's clearly he's a buffoon. Yes, he's a ruthless buffoon. We're familiar with ruthless buffoons being in power. Clearly, Basil Rathbone playing Captain Esteban Pascual is the sort of the real authority behind the dumb guy. And that's, of course, that's perfect for Basil Rathbone, because Basil Rathbone, despite being Sherlock Holmes, was a great villain. But I like that the idea that this guy who took over, Don Luis Quintero, is kind of just an idiot and he's wrecking everything because he's so corrupt. But he's so stupid that he doesn't ever really realize that his wife is running around on him. So I liked all that stuff. And like you said, I'm surprised that was in a movie where you would think the Hays Code might have not allowed that kind of stuff in there.
But you know, I got the sense that he did know. And,
oh, did you really?
And was okay with it, because he kept mentioning how, he's Capitan Esteban, was Pascual, was saying how he's used to taking her out for the morning ride and you know, just little things like that, where basically he acknowledged that they were spending a lot of time together. And I don't know if he was really so dumb that he didn't realize what was going on.
You think he did know and he doesn't care?
I think he knows. I got the feeling that he, because like you're saying, he's not a smart person, but he's clever. And I think as long as he was benefiting from it, because they were making a lot of money, I think as long as he was benefiting from it, he didn't really care too much. But I don't know. I mean, maybe I'm reading more into it than was there. But there is a lot of intrigue in this movie.
Yeah, I kind of got that he knew. I kind of got a feeling of like, you know, like, Rob, we cover Hollywoodland. It's kind of like the Eddie and Tony Mannix thing, you know.
Okay, all right.
That's kind of what I got. He's like, as long as she's happy and she's not bothering me because she can go on her rides with Esteban and now she can go on her rides with Don Diego. And you get the idea that, you know, now Esteban's, you know, you're mowing my grass while I'm mowing his, dude. You know, when they're at dinner together, which is.
Right. He even mentions how the captain is jealous.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and so, yeah, I that was my sense of it. But like I said, there's a lot of it. I mean, from the beginning, Don Diego kind of keys in on what's going on, you know, that there's a corrupt government and that there's cruelty happening. And he instantly kind of just starts plotting in, you know, in the sense that he disguises his abilities and who he can really be, and you know, which eventually, you know, he becomes Zorro. And but you know, there's the whole plot with Capitan Esteban and Quintero, you know, basically taxing everyone to death. Quintero is also skimming money off the top to send to Spain, so he and his wife Inez can go to Spain. Inez is cheating on Quintero with the captain, and also wants to get together with Don Diego. You know, there's just a lot going, you know, there's just a lot going on. And I really appreciated also that the captain was, like you said, he was kind of the power behind the throne. And as long as he was making money, and as long as he felt like he was in control, which he definitely was, because he threatens Quintero at some point. You know, I think he was happy with that, which I thought made his character really interesting and a nice, no pun intended, a nice foil for Zorro.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting, too. Even, you know, Inez, she wants to get Lolita out of the picture and send her to the convent to be a nun because,
in the worst way.
Her beauty is basically eclipsing her. You know, that's basically, she is jealous of her. This is her niece. And she's like, you're too pretty. I'm getting, you know, you need to get out of town, you know, cause you're attracting the men that I'm trying to get, you know? So it's like, wow.
Yeah. There's a lot going on in this movie. It's interesting.
Yeah. That's, I mean, it's funny that that Linda Darnell's character is named Lolita, because of course you cast a 16-year-old, you know, you're like, well, yeah, she is kind of a Lolita here. They don't, I mean, she's playing older, obviously, but again, it's like, oh my God, she's only 16.
What did you think? Playing much older in the movie. She's 17.
Oh, that's, I guess so. Yeah. Oh God. That's wow.
Well, to be fair, in the book, she is also named Lolita and she is also 17. Which I'm thinking for that time was probably, you know, not that young.
Going to be marriage age, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I know Valerie Hobson played the wife in Werewolf of London and Bride of Frankenstein, to the leads that were much older than her. And she was like 18. So, I mean, you know, and that was in 35. So, yeah. So it was just, you know, Hollywood, but yeah, it does kind of, you know, for the time period, it makes sense. You know, if she'd, you know, been 19, she'd been an old maid, I guess, if she hadn't been married yet.
What's wrong with you?
Yeah. It's this lonely spinster, Lolita Quintero. What did you guys make of the fact that we kind of don't ever see the turn from Diego, where, because when we first see him, we see him going through his paces and he's training and he's clearly good at it. Like they talk about how you know that he's able to, a lot of his fellow soldiers, their horse can't make the jump, but he can make it, and he's very good with the sword. But the
cockerel of California,
yeah. Right? There you go. That was my nickname at one point. But I mean, like he's when we see him, he's talented, but he is foppish. And we don't ever really see him decide to hide who he is and become Zorro, kind of. Like, you know what I mean? Like, he just – that's something that happens off camera, which I thought was an interesting way to do it, in that we have to sort of follow that a little bit. We have to kind of catch up with him a little bit. He's made this decision that, all right, I'm really going to – he's going to do kind of what Bruce Wayne does in the Dark Knight movies, where he's going to play up the foppish, you know, man of leisure sort of thing. I thought that was interesting that we don't, there's no moment where we see him sort of decide what to, you know, decide, I'm going to grab a mask and become this. All of a sudden he just, boom, he's this masked man.
I was just going to say, I don't know if that is a product of the way movies were made back then. You know, they were just kind of made to get the story out and not a whole lot of, a backstory, or if they were relying on people already being familiar with it, because the book was a pretty big hit and it had already been out for 20 years. So I don't know if it was either of those things or if they just felt like, let's just cut to the chase.
It's kind of interesting because like Max says, he's like, he kind of goes into the foppish character on the fly, really.
Right.
It's like,
yeah.
It's like, you know, he's coming across on the boat from the ship and the guy rowing the boat tells him how awful the alcalde is. And he's like, hey, you're talking about my dad. And then when he gets into town and they, you know, I'm the alcalde's son. And they're like, the one guy's had his tongue removed by the alcalde, you know? And so he's like, okay, I'm in new territory here. And he like instantly, before he goes and visits the alcalde's office, you know, his former home, he like on the fly invents the fop, you know, and mm-hmm. it's kind of interesting because usually, you know, I'm thinking, of course, like I said, I just came from watching a lot of the Guy Williams. You know, he's got the Bernardo character to bounce, you know, his decisions off of. And this, you know, Tyrone Power does not have that. He doesn't have a confidant to give exposition to. So he's got it's very just he flows like right into it. It's kind of interesting. And I know you guys brought this up on the Mirror Factory, Max, but I really felt like they got as close as they could in 1940 to making him like he's like playing almost like a gay character, like mm-hmm. a stereotypical gay character, yeah. Because he is like seems like absolutely not interested at all in marrying mm-hmm. Lolita. I mean, and he is so over the top with his.
Yeah. I mean, to the point that Lolita is insulted.
Yeah,
because they dance and she's kind of thrilled by the dance because he's such a good dancer and there's obvious chemistry between the two of them. But as soon as she says it, she goes, oh, how, so I don't remember what the exact line is, but it's something like how thrilling to dance in this way. And he says something like how exhausting.
Yeah.
And she gets mad and stomps off.
Yeah.
And during that whole, because that's taking place at the alcalde's home, which used to be the Vega home. And they are having a dinner party. And especially in that dinner party, Tyrone Power really lays it on thick with the kind of like gay signaling, I guess it would be in those days, because of the way he talks, and it's not overt, but it's definitely foppish.
Mm-hmm. The big set piece of the film is the final battle, the final sword battle with Basil Rathbone. Again, the screenwriters really did just kind of grab the screenplay from Robin Hood and just kind of it was in the days before cut and paste, but they kind of, I think, cut and pasted some stuff. But to me, the big set piece is when Zorro shows up and threatens Don Quintero. That to me is the big scene, because we finally see Zorro kind of skulking around in the shadows. And it's sort of Zorro being kind of like Batman, which is the kind of thing that we want, I think, from sort of a Zorro film. Because he's got, I mean, Zorro's costume is unerringly cool. It's just such a great looking suit. And so I like the idea of seeing him skulk around. So, that's the big scene where we see him. It's lit by candle. And he's cornered. And there's one point, there's like a key light right on his eyes where he's in the mask. And I want to mention that the cinematographer for this film is a guy named Arthur Miller, not that one. He did films like How Green Was My Valley, Anna and the King of Siam, again, with those actresses from this film. The Rains Came with Tyrone Power and The Razor's Edge with Tyrone Power. So he would go on to work with Tyrone Power in a couple other films. This film, it's, you know, beautifully lit. And I wish that they had done a few more scenes like that of Zorro walking around in the dark and being almost kind of like ninja-like. I wish there had been a little more. I mean, I already said I wish there was more Zorro in this movie, but I like that scene. And I like that he has like that kind of like weird death trap that he puts Quintero into, where like the sword is pointed at his neck and it's up to Pasquale to come in and he's like, what are you doing? And he's like, you know, but I mean, what did you guys think of that scene? Cause to me, it's like, that's the sort of coolest Zorro moment we get.
Yeah. That's the Batman Year One, gentlemen, you've eaten well.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
That's what that is. Yeah. I love that scene. That probably is like my favorite scene. In the one where he shows up, later on when they're doing the tax collecting, That's another great scene. He's like, you know, he's because he's standing there and he's got like the shadow of, you know, projecting, you know, behind him. And we didn't get enough. That is my one complaint about this film. There wasn't enough of that. We needed at least two more scenes of Zorro just showing up and, you know, slinking out of the shadows and then slinking back in. And we never really got a good sword fight when he was in costume, you know, which is a shame. But yeah, I loved everything about that scene.
I thought, you know, I really enjoyed it because I thought it showed the cleverness of Zorro, and which I would have liked to have seen more of. And, you know, it's interesting because in the book, again, it was Zorro is a much more cavalier kind of character. He jokes a lot. He laughs a lot. And you didn't see as much of that in this movie. You saw a little bit of it, but it's a more serious Zorro than what's in the book. But I think it makes sense for a movie like this because, it is kind of trying to be a swashbuckler movie and a romance movie, which I guess is goes hand in hand with a swashbuckler usually. And they, you know, I think it suits it well. You guys had mentioned earlier that, you know, his costume kind of changed more than once, which I thought was interesting. I didn't really quite understand why, but you know, it was really a very cool scene because, like you said, he kind of just comes out of the shadows. His eyes are shining in the dark. And he is kind of scary, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, Quintero is afraid of him, and everything that Zorro does in that scene is meant to play on that and to make him even more scared of him. And I think Quintero, when he does that bit with the sword and leaves him there, I think Quintero is genuinely afraid that Zorro is going to run him through. And yeah. I think that is interesting. And I'm kind of wondering if, you know, if the time in the movie was compressed or what was going on, because it seemed not only that he becomes Zorro very quickly, but the reputation and the legend of Zorro seemed to spread really quickly.
I have to say, Zorro has terrible handwriting, by the way. Those notes that he puts up. Hey, really, I know he's probably trying to hide his real handwriting. You know, he did it with like his left hand or something, so people don't recognize the Don Diego's. But those notes that he puts up, I'm like, what did he do that? Did he dip his sword in ink? Like, what is that? It's a weird looking handwriting they got on those things.
He's got away with words though. At one point, I think the second one or something, it said something about my sword will be dripping with his blood. And
yeah.
I was like, wow.
What did you think about the big romance scene with him dressing up as the monk, where he, you know, he ends up talking to Lolita and she doesn't know who he is, obviously. But that's like their kind of big. It's a bit of a comedy scene, obviously, because it's all mistaken identity. To me, it feels very Batman-ish. It's Batman, you know, when he's having to dress as something, you know, he's in one of his myriad costumes from Year One or something. But what did you think of that scene? Which is again the scene that follows immediately after him being Zorro for the kind of the big first time.
Yeah, I loved it actually. It was actually one of my favorite scenes as well, just because it's classic Zorro. It's Zorro in the middle of the hornet's nest, trying not to get caught and being in disguise of one kind or another. And, you know, of course, it's that classic deep hood with the in the monk's robes and you can't see him. And it's, you know, he's just trying to get out. But it turns out that Lolita is there praying for a husband, of course. And so she can't see his face. And she initially mistakes him for Fray Ramon and says, oh, no, I'm visiting from a different mission. He goes, oh, maybe you can help talk to me. And as they're talking, she's talking about how her aunt Inez wants to send her to a convent. And Diego, as this friar, is saying, oh, you know, that would be terrible. What a waste of, you know, that would be. And he's saying like completely inappropriate things for a priest. But of course, Lolita is kind of flattered by the whole thing. And there's one of my favorite parts of that scene is they're sitting down on a bench at one point and, you know, they've been talking and he's telling her, you know, oh, you know, your beauty would be wasted in a convent and all this sort of thing. And she's trying to see his face and she leans over to see his face and he leans over and then she leans over more and he leans over more and then she slowly comes back up and then he slowly, you know, it's classic kind of vaudevillian comedy, physical comedy. And it's not played big, but I thought it was really effective. And, you know, that is really the start of the romance between Diego and, Diego/Zorro and Lolita, because at the end of the scene, she discovers that, you know, she sees his sword pointing out from under the robe and realizes who he is. And I don't remember if that is the scene. Is that the scene where he kisses her hand, or he does something? But she's very taken with him.
Yeah, yeah. I think that is that moment. Yeah.
Yeah. And I thought from beginning to end, I thought that scene was really well done. And it's just these two actors in this pretty quiet scene. And I thought it was really effective.
Yeah, but, I really like that Max said it really well. That whole scene's great. And it's so good that it was lifted in numerous other movies, including The Mask of Zorro. Antonio Banderas and Catherine Zeta-Jones have pretty much the same scene. And also, it was lifted in The Legend of the Lone Ranger, Rob.
Oh, that's right.
Which is much more of a Zorro thing than a Lone Ranger thing. So now it makes total sense, because I haven't seen this movie in so long, I forgot it was in it. So, yeah.
Wow.
There really should have been a Zorro Lone Ranger team-up movie. I don't know how they would have contrived that, but they could have fudged the timeline a little bit and had them around at the same time. That would have been really cool.
Yeah. Clayton Moore played both at one point, so why not? You know? Yeah.
what did you think of that scene, Rob?
Oh, I liked it a lot. Again, it's the film really does want to push the romance angle. In that regard, I think there's a lot of DNA from this movie in Superman, a film Chris and I are somewhat familiar with, where they're really pushing the romance in that film. And I think that's part of the big sales pitch of this, is that they want you to really fall in love with these two really incredibly beautiful people to fall in love together. And it is a cute scene, because of course he's, you know, he can't be revealed. And I love the deep shadows, like you said, about the hood, where he's, and then of course he can't help himself. If he really wants to get away with this, he would not be saying some of the flirty things he's saying, but he can't help himself. And I like that, because it's like, even though he's playing such a kind of like dandy, he's still Tyrone Power, you know, he's still kind of a manly man kind of thing. And so he can't help himself. And so I thought that scene was very funny. And again, I hadn't realized how much Frank Miller took from this kind of stuff for Year One, in terms of there were so many scenes of Batman dressed as somebody else. And while he's out there being Batman, but he's not dressed as Batman. And that scene reminds me of that quite a bit. So it's a fun thing. And I like the idea that because Diego grew up in this building or whatever term you want to call it.
Yeah.
The Hacienda. He knows all the secret passages and how to skulk around and stuff like that. I liked all that stuff too, that it was like he can find his way around stuff that you wouldn't think most people can't, because they don't know it as intimately as he does. And I liked all that. And also I liked I haven't really mentioned the father, Don Veja, played by, again, Montague Love. I like that scene where they talk about how he might want to reclaim power. And some of his people are saying, well, you can just sort of reclaim it by force, because it was taken from you by force. And he's like, basically, two wrongs don't make a right. What's the point of having a government if I take it over in a show of force? Quintero did. I like that scene a lot. I thought that was cool that he kind of is like, look, this has to be done right. Otherwise, none of this will be worth doing. I thought that was a nice moment for that character.
Yeah. And I think, it's important to note that is kind of Diego's whole impetus for doing the Zorro thing, is because he wants to do it without, he knows that his father wouldn't approve.
Right.
And that's the whole reason he's doing it in secret. I thought I'm sorry, I forgot his name, but the guy doing Don Alejandro, that is pitch perfect. I mean, that is the character from the book. It is completely well done. And I I really appreciate his relationship with Diego, because the thicker Diego lays on the foppishness, the more frustrated he gets. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it is played for laughs, because it's the whole kind of head slapping frustration going on.
Oh, you.
Exactly. What kind of son have you given me? You know, he tells his wife. And but I think it's really done well. And there's still a dignity to Don Alejandro, where you can see why he would have been the leader of this of Los Angeles.
You know, it's kind of, I'm kind of surprised that it took them that long to kind of that really Basil Rathbone, Pascal's character, didn't like. Really, you almost thought he says that he has a line in there where you think he's going to figure out that Diego is Zorro, because I mean, Zorro is campaigning really hard to get Alejandro back as the Alcalde. So it's like, who just, this Zorro just showed up in town. Who else just showed up in town? You know, and it's really interesting because it's the dumb, you know, Quintero that puts two and two together at the end once he sees, you know, the sword fight between Diego and Esteban. And so I thought that was actually kind of refreshing that it was him that put two and two together. And then, of course, they find his muddy boot prints lead up to secrets through the secret passageway. And as Rob said, who knew the home better than him? Right.
Right.
So it made sense. But I thought that was kind of, interesting, because I really thought they were going to have, one of the, you know, typical, I know who you are, and then, you know, Diego's got to do some kind of, you know, sleight of hand trick to fake out Esteban, you know, midway through the movie, and they kind of drop that thread until the end when they have their sword fight. And I don't know if Esteban was running through his head, you know, that I'm fighting Zorro at this point, or if, you know, he just was really hated Diego so bad that he didn't care at that point.
Yeah, and that is true. I there was a point where I think he's talking to Quintero, and he's telling him how you realize what this means, don't you? And I'm like, oh, here you go. You know, like Chris is saying, here he goes. He's gonna reveal Diego Zorro. And he says, the Caballeros must have hired someone to help them and put Alejandro back in power. And I was like, what? that threw me off a little bit, but I was like, all right, you got to go along with this ride.
Way to go, Sherlock. You didn't figure it out.
Exactly. And like you guys were saying, Quintero is the one who ended up being a Sherlock in the end, because he was like, muddy boots, I know who you are.
Yeah. Before we discuss the climactic fight scene, because that is the big, despite the Zorro scene, this is really the big set piece. I do want to mention, I have the movie running here in the background as we're talking, and I hadn't noticed this the first two times I watched it, but now there are so many ass shots of Tyrone Power in this movie. There are a lot of ass shots of him in super tight pants. And that's,
oh, yeah.
I'm like, wow, this clearly was, I really think they were like, this is going to be for Tyrone Power's female fans. And we have to throw some Zorro stuff in because the name of the movie is Zorro. But really, it's Tyrone Power in a costume drama, because he is constantly with his ass towards the camera all the time. And so I'm like, yeah, they were really trying to hit on that big female audience that already loved Tyrone Power.
He could fill out those pantalones, I got to tell you.
Man, he is tight in this thing.
That's California's ass. Yeah.
Seriously, my goodness. So the big fight scene, the big duel at the end, one of the things I love is that when Pascual and Diego decide to get into a sword fight, like they're going to do it like gentlemen, like they both stand there and they kick their coats off and they take like their little extra little thing, like instead of it, like, they're both about to say like, we're going to kill each other, but let's be men about this, or let's be gentlemen. And there's like this whole 30 seconds where we're just watching them get ready, which is totally in modern blockbusters that would just be cut out, of just watching them sit there and be like, oh, let me take off my epaulets and let me take off my thing or whatever. So then they get into this big fight. And I was looking at some of the trivia for this one. And apparently they asked Basil Rathbone how good of a sword fighter was Tyrone Power, because apparently he did a lot of his own stunt work. And he said he was really good. He said he was much better than Errol Flynn even was. And one of the tricks that they employ for the fight scene is they drop some frames. They shot it at a different speed and then played it back. So when they go, the actors are going much faster than they really went in real life. And so it gives it that extra, like, wow, these two are really amazing. And it's a great sword fight. I mean, it's, again, Basil Rathbone must have been feeling like deja vu, man. I already did this, you know, 5 years ago. But that back then, that was in color. But the fight scene is great. And it ends with this really wonderful bit where Diego stabs Pascual right in the heart. The blood starts to drip out of his shirt. He falls, and as he hits the wall, he hits a painting, and he dislodges the painting, and underneath the painting is the Z for Zorro that he had carved earlier, which I thought was – that's a very Batman-esque kind of touch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I like that a lot. I thought that was a nice little touch. And, you know, I didn't know this until, you know, I was doing some research for this, you know, for this show, that Basil Rathbone was a fencer in real life. And I had no idea, but it definitely shows, because that is a hell of a sword fight. when I was watching it, I was, you know, I was expecting, you know, some clashing and that sort of thing, but first of all, it's longer than I thought it was going to be. And it goes all over the room. I mean, they're going at it. These guys just hate each other, and it really showed in the way they, because like you said, they were sword fighting as gentlemen.
Mm-hmm.
There was aggression in that.
Yeah, I could see why it would have been tough to have Tyrone Power dressed as Zorro with his cape. Maybe they could have done something without the cape. So I could see why he's not in the Zorro costume, but again, it is kind of a shame we didn't get to see that, because it's a really great fight scene. I mean, I think it rivals the one in The Adventures of Robin Hood, and so it's a nice big climactic set piece to end the film.
Yeah, I saw that you know, doing some research and in general on other Zorro projects this month, that Albert Cavins was the fencing instructor and the on the set that you know, that helped choreograph the fights and everything, and he had worked with Fairbanks, Douglas Fairbanks, on the original Mark of Zorro. He'll work with Guy Williams on the Disney series, and his son Albert actually subbed for Tyrone Power here and a few shots from the back that Tyrone Power didn't do, some of the more advanced shots, and Basil Rathbone apparently did them all, because apparently, and I didn't know this either, Max, Basil Rathbone was apparently the best fencer in Hollywood. Who knew? He also, Fred, the son that subbed for Tyrone Powers, also appeared a couple of times on the Disney series. So these guys go, they go in deep with Zorro, but you know, I mean, they apparently had a lock on fencing in Hollywood. So for like, you know, 50 years.
Wow.
I imagine knowing how to sword fight as a side, you know, a side thing that you could do really helped you stay employed in Hollywood in the 30s and 40s.
Oh, yeah.
Because that's when they made those types of movies. Nowadays, sword fighting is not something you really see in movies anymore. But back then, that was probably almost as handy as being able to ride a horse. You know, it's just like, oh, wow, you'll constantly be employed because we're cranking out 16 Westerns a week over here at this point.
Yeah, so. I was going to say, in those days, actors were expected to be able to do everything. And you know, Tyrone Power does almost everything in this. He sword fights. He rides a horse really well. You know, he dances. He's a triple threat.
Yeah.
So the film wraps up with this big climactic fight scene, this huge conflagration of people where they're storming the hacienda. We see that Diego is escaping. He's climbing up on rooftops. And again, we see that this is, you know, absolutely an A production, because there are hundreds of extras and they're all in costume and they've got torches and swords and they're running around. They're pouring out of doorways. And it's just, it's a massive scene. At one point, Mamoulian pulls the camera back. And you can see that the entire square is filled with people. We even see Fray Philippe running around hitting people with some sort of wood staff that he's doing. I like that. He's trying to, you know, not commit violence, but yet he's still bopping people on the head. Even,
and every time he does, he says, "May God forgive me."
Right, yeah, yeah.
That's awesome.
Don Vega is hitting people. I mean, it's just a massive, massive scene. And that is basically, it wraps up as the government, as Veja is restored back to power and the government, and we end with a big moment between with Diego and Lolita there. I'm kind of surprised, considering this was a big hit. It was a very popular film. I saw that Ruben Mamoulian liked to include a cat in every film for good luck. And there is a scene with a cat in this movie. And as Quintero, Gail Sondergaard snuggles a cat at one point. So, and this film was a huge success. So I'm a little shocked that there wasn't a second film. Maybe Tyrone Power wasn't interested, but this seems like something you could have done another adventure of Zorro. That seemed to, it would have been, you know, set up quite well.
Yeah. Well, do you think that they kind of shot themselves in the foot with that ending? Because like you said, everybody.
That's true. Movie, everything is restored. Yeah. That's true.
Yeah, unless he went to Monterey or something, and you know, people hadn't got around that he was Zorro, right? Yeah. So I just don't think, you know, I mean, obviously there were sequels, especially, you know, you know, the you know, the horror films we keep talking about because I'm here, but you know, you know, there were a lot of sequels for those, but it's like A Pictures didn't seem to get sequels like B Pictures did, you know?
That's true. It wasn't an automatic thing, yeah.
Second Robin Hood, you know, mm-hmm. why wouldn't you make a sequel to The Adventures of Robin Hood with Errol Flynn, you know? I mean, because that was a huge hit. So I don't know. It's just, it's so strange because nowadays, you know, there's the sequel's already in pre-production.
Oh, man, if they had done this now, Throne Power would have been locked into three films already. I mean, they absolutely would have had that done. Right. Yeah, I mean, it is. I mean, the final shot of the film is of Don Veja as he assumes power. It doesn't even end with Zorro. I mean, he's in the next to last shot, but it's not even like the final shot is of the Z. So I really, as we're sitting here talking about it, it really does feel like that they looked at this film as like a Gone with the Wind historical epic kind of thing, not so much a Zorro movie. And like you said, Chris, I think they were more inclined to, instead of making a sequel, to simply reteam the actors, which they did, because the very next film that Ruben Mamoulian and Tyrone Power and Linda Darnell did was they all did one film together, Blood and Sand. So obviously 20th Century Fox thought, well, let's put them all together in another movie, but it's not a Zorro movie. So as a one-off, it holds up really well. I thoroughly enjoyed it. Like I said, I wish there was more Zorro in it for a movie called Mask of Zorro. I wish I wish there was more Zorro in it. But otherwise, it's a highly enjoyable action film. And I love Tyrone Power, so it's fun seeing him play kind of two roles.
I agree. I really enjoyed this. Like I said, it was a little bit different than, since I'm not familiar with the book. I haven't read the book either, which I really need to do that. But it took some liberties with what I know of the way Zorro films and stories usually go. But I didn't mind. I was so engaged with the characters, and the actors were so charming playing them that, other than, I kind of wish I'd seen him in costume a little bit more. At the end of the day, I was completely satisfied at the end of it. And I look forward to giving it another shot, another watch.
Yeah. And, you know, with the way things are nowadays, I've been spending a lot more time indoors and watching TCM. And a lot of times I'll find, a movie from this era will be on, you know, on TV. And I'm always telling myself I'm not going to watch the whole thing, and I end up watching the whole thing. And I think, you know, just the actors and the production, and I mean, they're not all winners, but they're all very engaging. And, there's a reason these actors were under contract and why they were put in movie after movie. And especially when the chemistry worked, they were thrown together more than once. And the Mark of Zorro is just proof of that. You know, I think everyone has great chemistry together. Not only Tyrone Power and Linda Darnell have great chemistry, but also Tyrone Powers and the actor playing the friar, who is Eugene Pallette. Sorry, they also, because you know, they mentioned kind of that Fray Felipe has been a part of his life all his life. You know, he kind of says, you know, the boy that I raised, and they imply that he's the one who taught him how to sword fight. You know, when he was young, and you can see there's a point where he sees how foppish Diego is acting, and he's so disappointed in him. And then later, when he finds out that he is Zorro, because he's the first one that he shares the secret with, when he finds out that he's Zorro, he is just like bursting with pride. And, you know, that little bit of acting from people who didn't necessarily go on to be very famous just really makes this a very solid movie. And it's just, again, it's just well acted, it's well cast, and it's a good balance between action and humor. Like I said, I mean, it managed to get apparently two disinterested wives interested while it was playing in the background. And, you know, I think that that says something for this movie, that it would draw people to it the way it does.
That sounds like the premise for a film review show, is like disinterested wives. And whether they, you know, were you eventually sucked in? No, I wasn't. Yes, I was. All right, we get one disinterested wives up. That sounds like we may have something. We have to workshop that when we're done here. So, yeah, overall, yeah, I did enjoy this movie. Like I said, I was shocked that I didn't remember much from it when I first saw it, but that was a long time ago, and I've aged horribly since then. So, you know, like I said, it was fun, and I do want to kind of revisit the Antonio Banderas movies, and I want to see the Frank Langella one, which I've never seen, the one from the 70s. I've never gone around to seeing that, so I want to kind of try these, and maybe while we're rolling on here with Zorro Month, I will take advantage of that and check those movies out. So I think that's going to do it for this episode of the Film and Water Podcast, part of Zorro Month, talking about the Mark of Zorro. We'll be featuring a lot more Zorro content throughout the rest of the month across the network. So, Max, Chris, thank you so much for talking about this movie with me.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having us. It was great.
All right. Of course, you can find back episodes of our show on the website, findwaterpodcast.com. We're talking movies over on Twitter at Film and Water Pod. You can subscribe to the show on Spotify, Stitcher, and Apple Podcast. And if you want to support the Fine Water Podcast Network, go to patreon.com/FW Podcasts. And there you can unlock various rewards, one of which is to be name checked on a show of your choice. So big thanks to Neil Whitney for his support of the Film and Water Podcast. So that's going to do it. Use the check out the hashtag Zorro Month over on Twitter, so you can find all the related posts that we're doing and episodes that are forthcoming about Zorro. It's a big, exciting month talking about this this fun character. So that's going to do it. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Until the next episode, that's a wrap.
Zorro. 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 Zorro.